Red Eyes Radio. I hope you're staying warm if you're in the Western Hemisphere, and maybe managed to create some level of stillness in the Christ mass hysteria. Or if you're joining us from other parts of the world, that you're comfortable and ready for another radio program. My name is Henrik, and if you're a regular listener, you know that the website is redeyescreations.com. Today we are going to talk about WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, Operation Payback, the cyber war, internet censorship, the pirates and hackers, and the latest discoveries and data on this interesting story. We have James Evan Pilato with us from MediaMonarchy.com, who has been following this story for quite some time now as it's developed into a mainstream media monster of sorts. We are going to discuss those aspects of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange that you would not hear discussed in the mainstream media. Things that we think you should think about and consider before you come to any kind of conclusion about this story. James Evan Pilato, welcome to Red Eyes Radio. It's really good to have you here. We've been in contact in the past, of course. I'm familiar with your work. But in case we have some listeners with us out there who are not familiar with you, or, of course, Media Monarchy that you've been working on now for about 5 years. So tell us a little bit about Media Monarchy, James.
Well, first, just let me say thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited about it and have been a fan of Red Ice now for several years. Long story short, I'm from a small town in West Virginia, grew up with a kind of conservative Christian upbringing. Going to the church, we even had those guys that would play rock records backwards. And I don't know if you ever saw the Queen song backwards, "It's Fun to Smoke Marijuana" from Bites the Dust. We, I had those guys at my church when I was young, and that really kind of hit me at a young age to already kind of be interested and inquisitive about the media, at the same time not actually being allowed at the time to go to movies or buy music, having that, again, that kind of Christian conservative upbringing. So unfortunately, for my mom, who wanted to raise a good Christian boy, keeping me away from all those things just made me want to get into it more.
Of course, absolutely.
So Once that wall kind of fell and I was allowed and able to kind of get into it, I dived in headfirst, and for the better part of my life, I've always kind of been that media guy with friends who, I'm the one that friends, who's the guy that's in the movie? I get asked pop culture kind of questions. Mm-hmm. So jump several years later, and when I went to college, I got heavily involved in the radio station, and as well as doing sound design for the theater department. I became the music director at the college radio station, which was a non-commercial, small radio station, but big enough to where we reached a good 30-mile radius and had a good listenership. All the while, this now being post 9/11, I started to get into alternative research and 9/11 truth and all of these questions that, if you think back to 2002, 2003, there were so many documentaries and things starting to come out on a platform that we hadn't really had. Of course, we had the web for years, but that was the point where file sharing and video sites and podcasting and all these things started to explode. So I found myself in a funny spot of being, kind of the music pop culture guy, but somewhat secretly getting into conspiracy theories.
Ooh, yeah.
And I kind of kept it to myself in a way. Mm. Because, of course, you want to know at least a little bit of what you're talking about before you start flying off the handle and talking about all kinds of things to folks. So I basically kind of kept it to myself while I did tons of research and watched, a lot of documentaries, read a lot of books, started to collect a lot of things. And when I moved to Portland just about 5 years ago, I started Media Monarchy, the website, first, and was just kind of posting news to it. But as it grew and as I got a little more settled in Portland and got a regular job, I was able to start the radio show, which I do originally, as I started from day one, from an internet station here called the Portland Radio Authority. And I do the show there, and over the years, it's just, fortunately, slowly and steadily kind of grown. It's a one-man show, mm-hmm. but as the years have gone by, connecting up with other folks who, through the years, I either admire their work, and I'm sure there's, a lot of other folks, like you and I said, we've contacted each other through email through the years, but I couldn't say exactly when or even what it was about, but you can slowly make contact with these folks, and I would definitely say, over the last year connecting up with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com and the weekly video series that we do. That, I think, over the last year has kind of blasted Media Monarchy off to another level. So that's kind of a short version there.
Well, that's excellent. And that's called New World Next Week, by the way, that you're doing together with James Corbett. And we tried to get you both guys on, actually, as well, because you're doing that excellent series together. But for now, we're very happy to have you with us. And then later down the road, we'll probably have James Corbett with us on the side as well.
Uh-huh. And that, I was kind of hoping to be able to try and pull that off. But I think time zone wise, going from Portland, Oregon to Gothenburg, Sweden to Japan, the time zones are crazy.
That's right. And then, of course, people who are not yet aware of it, to find more about James here, go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com. And how often do you do your radio show then? About once a week or more than that, James?
I do it once a week. I do it live from the Portland Radio Authority. And I think for me, even though, you know, now in this era, I could record it from home and do it kind of pre-recorded. I think I've always liked, again, coming from a theater and FM radio background, I like having the schedule. I like having the live time that I know that, you know, 10 a.m. Friday mornings, you're live. Mm. So knowing myself, if I did it at home, it would be easier for me to go, I'll do it a little later. So I like having the deadline that Absolutely. Really continues and kind of forces you to continue to do the work.
So, I mean, we invited you here today, obviously, to talk about some of the latest stuff that has been happening in that sense. You're very, you're good at following the many of the stories that are hot, if I put it that way, in terms of alternative media. But obviously, we touch base with the mainstream media now and then as well. And one of the videos, actually, that I saw with you and James Corbett early on was when you talked a little bit about WikiLeaks. And it's been obvious that whole story has been going since, I guess, in the mainstream in one way or another, since 2008, really, when they started to get more and more momentum building up. And now the last couple of, month now, it's really gone crazy in that sense. Uh-huh. And even the alternative media now has really begun to looking into WikiLeaks. What are they? Where do they come from? Who's this Julian Assange guy and so forth as well? How much have you dived into this particular situation? And obviously, give us just your kind of overall overview of the whole situation that we're facing when it comes to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, James.
Well, to reference the video that you mentioned, James and I did an episode of New World Next Week this past July when the Afghan war logs came out. And we did an entire episode about New World Next Week, where we typically do it as kind of a short news broadcast where we'll cover three unrelated stories. That was the first time we had ever done a show just on a single topic, because we could tell at that point this is obviously important. But our take on it, even in July, was from the standpoint of, yes, this is important, but I don't know that any of these things are really all that earth-shattering. Yes, it gives more credence to things we kind of already knew. But we were just, the title of the video was WikiLeaks plus mainstream media hype equals question mark.
That's right.
So that video at the time did get a bit of, you know, kind of backlash. For the most part, our videos on YouTube get lots of, you know, positive comments. And that was the point where we started to get a lot more, you know, thumbs down and bad comments. And it made us realize, wow, this, you know, we might be touching a nerve here. Mm. So jump several months later to the most recent release, which is referred to as Cablegate, these State Department and these embassy messages.
That's right.
When this happened in the past several weeks, for whatever reason, folks found that older video from July and other people started to re-upload it and repost it, and it sort of, you know, gave it a new life. And that was the point that things really started to take off. And I would have to say again, you know, most of my friends and coworkers, and I work actually at a small Oregon-only chain of grocery stores, and that's my regular job. So it's a very social job. And most of, like I said, coworkers and friends know what I do, but I don't, you know, I can't be the conspiracy guy at work.
Sure,
I don't tend to go off and talk about things unless maybe folks ask about it. Or if there's something important of, hey, you should check this specific thing out. But Henrik, I've never had more people ask me about a single topic until this latest WikiLeaks went, you know, massive.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the one hand, it makes me think, God, where were all you guys asking questions during some of these other events? Where were all you guys, you know, 2 years ago? I wish I would have had these folks saying, James, what, you know, what do you think about this Obama guy? Should I vote for him? You know, where were the questions then?
Right,
it's been really interesting, and that just adds more to this pile of what's really going on here.
Yeah.
The bigger a story gets, you know, you only kind of add more and more questions. Because to me, I kind of feel like if this guy, Julian Assange, again, kind of the face of WikiLeaks, the poster child, if you will, that if he was really an enemy of the state, wouldn't they have just quietly whacked him, you know, 2 years ago and not really said anything about it?
Yeah.
As we know, can be done.
Yeah.
But the fact that it just keeps going and building and growing, and again, it's literally grocery store checkout conversation now.
That's right.
Those are the things I think that start to become more and more suspicious. So I had looked into, you know, a little bit of it here and there, and of course I did cover, you know, the Afghan war logs and the collateral murder releases and some of the things from WikiLeaks this year. But it's only in this most recent wave that, again, he has kind of become the focal point, is when I started to do just more research and digging into the background of Julian Assange and some of the characters and connections, which we can start to dive into.
Absolutely. And well, I agree with you, obviously, in that sense as well. It's always interesting when it takes off in the mainstream, and you're right as well, that all of a sudden you have people around you who, in some cases, wouldn't, you know, talk about this kind of stuff, all of a sudden comments on it or brings it to, as happened to me too, bring it to my attention or ask me in some way about it, because they know what I'm involved in. And at that point, I begin to think, wait a minute, why is it this particular story is getting so much attention, and why is it catching the, you know, imagination, I guess, in that sense, of so many people? And as this, to this day, I don't have any clear, you know, answer to that, obviously. But it has been hyped tremendously, and I think as well that even the media works in a kind of a stupid way, obviously, as well, in many cases. All the WikiLeaks weren't supposed to have a kind of a face for it in that sense. That's what the media instantly is seeking. You know, who is behind this stuff? We have to put a face, associate that with what WikiLeaks is, and hence you have this also kind of incredible focus, if you will, in that sense, on Julian Assange and what he's doing and who he is and stuff like that as well.
The media almost needs a sort of human interest angle to continue to sell and hype the story.
That's right. Exactly. It's working with a basic psychology. No, people out there, they must identify with somebody in order to, like, comprehend this. Let's make it easy for them, etc. But what do you think is behind it, that in that sense? And let's talk about some of the people who are involved in WikiLeaks and how you perceive the whole situation, James.
I guess, I just first have to say, you know, I don't consider myself an expert on this, you know, by any stretch. I just want to look at more information, and I think what's so important is just to kind of ask questions.
That's right. Yeah.
And I want to thank, I'd have to throw out a thanks to my friend Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com, who does a lot of great work and has been kind of a help and a guidance to me in laying out maybe some of these questions that we want to ask about WikiLeaks. So we can ask first, you know, who is WikiLeaks? And it seems as it's everyone and no one simultaneously, for, you know, putting aside for the moment the face of WikiLeaks as Assange, but that it's, you know, it's everyone and no one at once. And that makes it kind of an elusive enemy, which, of course, you know, it seems the intelligence agencies throughout the decades, like an elusive enemy that you can't quite pin down, because then the threat is sort of amorphous and you can't really know what it is. It's not an army that's over that hill.
Right.
And we then have, you know, the hackers now that have come with Operation Payback and sort of attacking these other sites that have, you know, hurt WikiLeaks as far as their funding and their domains and things go, putting on V for Vendetta masks and calling themselves anonymous. So strange kind of pop culture references there. But it's also, you know, it's essentially anonymous whistleblowers. I wonder sometimes if the average folks maybe have the misconception that these are a bunch of hackers hacking into government computers and stealing all this information, which again would make it easier to sell the story of, we need to crack down on these guys, we need to hunt this guy down. But it's they have built it as, you know, a platform where people can anonymously upload, you know, information and documents, kind of like a dead drop. And it's also a project of something called the Sunshine Press, which I haven't really been able to actually find a whole lot about. But we look at the funding of WikiLeaks, and we find the connections to something called the Open Society Institute, and we find the one and only George Soros. And that's when we start to go, oh, okay, so there's some interesting characters involved here. And again, we don't have time to go into the history of George Soros, but essentially a convicted financial criminal and even alleged to have collaborated with the Nazis, for God's sake. That these are the kind of guys pushing this information.
He's destroyed a lot of countries, George Soros, with buying up currency. It happened here in Sweden. It's happened, I think he was involved even in the Greek little financial trouble as well. But go ahead, James.
Well, and then the question could be, is he involved in breaking down the United States?
That's
which
right.
We
That's
can
right.
kind of see here that it seems like there is some sort of coordinated effort to pull the rug out from under the states.
Yeah.
But again, that's another a whole topic. And it's interesting, too, that as far as the money that comes in and out, that there are, you know, the four or so ways that you can give money to WikiLeaks, but all of them use essentially, you know, kind of New World Order connected corporations and banks and protective legal clauses to bring the money in through Switzerland and Germany and Australia. So, of course, the setup is for the protection of all and to keep things anonymous, but it just adds more kind of questions on top. Such as, we then ask, if we asked who is WikiLeaks, we can ask who is Julian Assange, as he's now become kind of the face. And some of his background is kind of sketchy, and some of it's kind of lost and missing. But when you get into his background, and I believe you and Jim Mars touched on this briefly on a recent episode of Red Ice, but that Julian Assange comes kind of from a broken home,
yeah.
raised on the run, which then kind of reminds me of the film Running on Empty with River Phoenix, you know, on the run with parents who had been involved in, you know, violent anti-war protests and things. And as we'll see, you know, so many kind of pop culture connections and allusions through so many of these things. But
that's right, yeah.
The big exclamation points and even question marks pop up when we learn about this sort of cult that he was connected to
that's
for
right.
a few years. And it was run by a woman named Anne Hamilton Byrne, who I had never heard of. And I'm sure for a lot of the folks who do research into cults and ritual abuse, that this cult, essentially, out of Australia, I'm sure folks have known about. It was brand new to me. So Anne Hamilton Byrne ran a New Age cult called the Santini Catan Park Association, and you can read their Wikipedia entry. But they're also known as the Great White Brotherhood.
That's right.
Or also known as the Family.
Yeah.
So we can read into this, and like any cult leader, of course, they kind of exploit the weak and get people pulled in and get them emotionally and even financially, you know, connected and dependent on the group, that, you know, Jim Jones or any of those kind of things. But it connects to a mental hospital in Australia. And Anne Hamilton Byrne acquired, quote unquote, 14 kids between 1968 and 1975. Some of them, you know, were adoptions. Some of them arranged by the doctors and lawyers and social workers that were members of this cult. And even some were faked, telling a mother that their child died in labor, but that they've stolen the kid away.
Horrible.
And then these kids have, you know, changed identities, fake birth certificates, all of them given the last name, Hamilton Byrne, dressed alike, dyeing their hair all blonde.
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, and there are folks, like you said, doing more and more investigative work on this. Dave Emery has a great show and article that breaks down a lot of this that he calls Wiki of the Damned.
That's right. A lot of this, as I stumble over it anyway, comes from this particular article, James.
Okay, that he calls Wiki of the Damned. Again, another pop culture reference to the film Village of the Damned with all the little creepy, glowing-eyed, sort of silver-haired children.
That's right.
But in this, you know, mental hospital, this facility, these people were subjected to electroshock therapy and even lobotomies and even LSD doses. So then when you hear Strange Cult, you hear LSD, and you're seeing late 60s, early 70s, these things start to smack of the MO of MK Ultra and the intelligence agencies and the CIA. This is classic MK Ultra kind of setup. And one of the members, there was a former member of the family, someone named Sarah Moore, and she wrote a book called Unseen, Unheard, Unknown, which I believe is the family's motto. And in that book, she makes allegations that a company called Sandoz, which were the creators of LSD and even a part of the old IG Farben complex of Nazi Germany, there we go again. She alleges that Sandoz was supplying the family with free LSD. Again, this seems to be the connections and kind of the MO of things like, you know, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb and Cold Springs Harbor and MK Ultra and all of these sort of mind control, you know, experiments. Again, think something like Shutter Island. So Assange is sort of joined into this cult by his mother, Christine, who marries a musician involved in this cult. And they were involved with it for, I believe, about 3 years, and they were abusive. So the mom took Julian and then his younger, newer half-brother and hit the road and ran. And that's the point where things start to get a little shady, and you wonder, were they really on the run? Is this building some kind of cover? Because even a massive New Yorker article with Julian Assange points out that the mother would even tell folks where they were going and even return to places she had lived before, which again, if you were legitimately on the run, those are two things you would never do.
That's right.
So this kind of fleeing from the family, you know, just kind of adds more and more shady things. So then we jump to, they make it away from the cult. Julian, you know, they somehow live across the street from a computer place, and he gets his first computer and starts to get into, you know, programming and hacking and all of those things. Interestingly enough, the name he takes for himself as his kind of hacker name is Mindax, which I have, you know, had to look up from Roman poet Horace's Splendid Mindax, which translates as nobly untruthful or delightfully deceptive.
Interesting.
So that our hero, if you will, would take on the guise of being nobly untruthful or delightfully deceptive adds, you know, just another layer of questions to this. So, Henrik, what's your take on just these kind of cult connections and backgrounds?
There is a really it might be a stretch, but I'm going to present it anyway, and people can make of it what they want. And this has to do with the Operation Payback that you brought up. This has to do with WikiLeaks, and there is a connection with WikiLeaks to specifically to Sweden for the fact, not only for the fact that Assange is now being accused of rape, you know, up here, and that whole story is ridiculous in itself. But let's wait with that for now. And look at the Pirate Bay and something called the Pirate Party, because all of these, you know, associations or groups or what have you are also actually using the same kind of symbolism in their logo types and things like that. There is even a German computer hacking group that is called the Chaos Computer Club, where one of the co-founders, if you will, of WikiLeaks came from. His name is Daniel Domscheit-Berg, and he actually jumped off and started his own OpenLeaks, I think it's called, .org, because he felt that Julian's behavior was kind of becoming more and more dictatorial, as far as I've understood the situation. But in that regard, let's go back to Sweden here briefly as well, because WikiLeaks have their servers, you know, hosted on in Sweden, basically. It's a Swedish company called PRQ, and they've been involved in, obviously, helping the Pirate Bay to you know, have their activities going. And so that means that we have PRQ at the center of this, if you will, in that sense. We have the Pirate Bay, which have actually, if you look at it, exactly the same logotype as Operation Payback. It's this pirate kind of ship with the skull and crossbones on it, but they turn the skull into kind of an old one of those cassette tapes, basically. And there is something weird going on there, and it seems to be not only that they're using similar symbolism, but it's also the fact that one of the guys who are kind of behind the Pirate Bay and making that happen, basically, because he sold some of his technical services to PRQ, which started this up. His name is Carl Lundström, is a Swede. He's helped to start up all of this stuff. But in any regard, he also, his dad started a few companies up here in Sweden, which eventually was sold actually to Dada Sandoz Corporation, making
exactly.
him a millionaire in that sense. So he could fund and start up all these different things. So that's an interesting connection in itself. Then just furthermore, if we look closely at the symbolism of WikiLeaks, we find an hourglass, of course. And all of this is subtly connected, because if we look at the old Jolly Roger, which basically is the basis of the symbolism that all these are using, the Pirate Party, the Pirate Bay, the Operation Payback, has to do with the Jolly Roger, the skull and crossbones. And this goes back to Saturn, it goes back to death, basically, in that sense. And in many cases, in the old days, on the Jolly Roger, sometimes it was seen an hourglass as well, indicating your time is up, we're coming to reap your soul, basically, in that sense. So look at the Wiki logo and find, first of all, that the American continent is missing on that kind of the globe that they have on there. It's dripping from black down to white. But again, the primary thing that I see there is the hourglass, which basically makes it identical or aligning itself with the pirate symbolism that is so prominent within all of these organizations. And they seem to kind of stem from the same root if you track it, you know, far back enough. So I don't know what to make of it at this stage. I'm not jumping to conclusions. This is just a symbolism that is being used. But we know in certain cases that symbolism is kind of a subtextual communication, if you will, that is going on. And that's just a very, very interesting side note, if you ask me. But what do you make of, James? Do you think that is important at all? Do you look at symbolism at all in this?
I absolutely do. And I was just about to say thank you because you basically just kind of fleshed out some of the points that, as I was doing my initial rundown there, I kind of jumped over the part about Carl Lundstrom and Sandoz buying his family business, which gave him the money to start Pirate Bay and PRQ and the political party and all of those things. I think as far as, we'll take this as a sidebar a little bit, as far as the website and the show, I try not to get too much into maybe sometimes the more esoteric things and the, you know, occult symbolism. I'm, you know, personally interested in it and its relationship, you know, to politics and pop culture. But it maybe as far as the website goes, I try not to get too much into it. I guess I'd like to think if I can't get folks to, you know, kind of agree and figure out the simple things about, you know, the Federal Reserve or 9/11 or just some of those things, it's like I'm not going to hit you with, you know, occult symbolism and
it's going to get much easier
corporate
at that
logos
point.
And things.
Right.
But yeah, the Sandoz connections and the piracy, and don't even the early kind of that reach back to, you know, Dutch East India Company and
right.
early the opium. And doesn't that then just jump up to Skull and Bones and the intelligence agencies?
Exactly. That's what I think it is in one way. It might be a subtle communication. If nothing else, there's something more even, you know, deeper, mysterious going on there in that sense, because if we look at what WikiLeaks is doing, it is in one way, in effect, changing the geopolitical, if nothing else, landscape, if you will, currently by releasing some of this stuff. And it seems to me also then, James, that a lot of this is focusing on the United States and primarily obviously blaming, you know, the United States for this, although there's many different countries involved in the Iraq and Afghan war at this point. But what do you make of it? Do you think that this is going to be used now as well then for another purpose to I mean, I did a commentary a while back here, and I just noted or kind of alluded to the fact that it seems like in one way that the United States is kind of painted out as being the new Nazis of the world, if you know what I mean, in that sense. It's the new evil focus subtextually, if you look at it from the point of view of the rest of the world. And this seems to be aiding along, if you will, in that process. I don't know. What is your take on that, James?
No, it does. I mean, it really seems as though for whatever reason, the powers that be, the connected families, the multi-generational serial killers, if you will, that the agenda seems to be the now destruction, or at least, you know, kind of breaking the back and breaking the spirit of the United States. And whether you just do that through debasing the food or debasing the media or debasing, you know, the politics, because of course, after 8 years of something like George Bush, anything is going to look pretty damn good after that. So everybody kind of, you know, jumped to Obama, which again, to kind of come back to Portland being kind of a big you know, stronghold, you know, a well-meaning, progressive, kind of liberal stronghold. Mm-hmm. But if we, I guess, kind of maybe ask a couple more questions about the way that this is going before we get to where it may be leading, unfortunately.
Yeah.
To kind of ask the question of, you know, why wasn't WikiLeaks already shut down, you know, just like any site selling, you know, bootleg Beatles songs or any of that kind of stuff? Because we did see the recent domain name raids where I think 82 domains were shut down here in the States with, you know, no due process or anything. That this is going to be used, unfortunately, to crack down on the web, but we'll hold off for that.
Yeah.
The other question, so back to Assange, why is someone who was what it seems was basically involved in a CIA LSD cult, why is he now being revered as, you know, a multinational hero? It seems like if he is some sort of MK Ultra subject, and again, to mention that Wiki of the Damned article connected in there, there's an old photo that appears to show Assange as a young kid dressed in the same identical jumpsuit with the long dyed blonde hair as a few other kids. So if he's an MK Ultra subject, he's been groomed at an early age, and I couldn't help but think of the similarities between some of the Disney kids that have been groomed and brought up and then sort of foisted, you know, ready to go into the, you know, media industrial complex. Have you noticed that our original image of Assange through the last couple of years has been him with the long blonde hair and the red tie?
That's right.
But in the last couple of months, as we've now hit Cablegate and everything has gone, you know, super viral, do you notice that he cut his hair? His hair's cut short. It's not blonde anymore, and it's kind of gray, and his suits are much better, and he's wearing these kind of, you know, reflective sunglasses. I could not help but be reminded of when we've seen folks like Britney Spears cut their hair and kind of freak out. It you know, reminds me of the work that folks like Freeman have done on some of these kind of possible, you know, mind control or ritual abuse subjects. So I couldn't help but notice that lately, as he's now become even more the face, putting his face on the WikiLeaks websites, putting him on the cover of Forbes and the cover of Time magazine, that he's now become this face. Is it possible he's been groomed his whole life, whether he maybe knows it consciously or not, for a role to play, for a mission, and now it's, you know, lights up, you know, lights, camera, action.
That's right.
And now is his time, you know, on this stage.
he's been really, exactly, it feels like it's been, what do you call it? You have a manager, obviously, behind the scenes, who's like, we need to, you know, improve your image a little bit, just like a politician or what have you, when they reach a certain stage or a certain, you know, progression up the ladder, so to speak. That, you know, if people out there are going to believe you, we can't have you run around with his long hair and your frumpy clothes, what have you. So let's put you in a nice suit, cut your hair, make it look good, you know, in that sense, because
exactly, it could just be good PR.
it feels like PR, but again, what it echoes off is that somebody is, you know, handling this. This is turned more political, if I put it that way. I'm not saying that they don't, you know, didn't have this agenda to begin with, but it's definitely gone a long way from being a little group of hackers, if you will, that are willing to protect whistleblowers and inside people's protecting their identity if they want to release some of this stuff online, if I put it that way. So someone has definitely gone in there and managed to, like, twist his image around in that sense to make it look much better and polished, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he's now kind of become a hero, I think, to the left, and we can get into that in just a couple minutes. But let's now tie in even more stranger connections. Of course, his arrest. And this, you know, hits you right in your neighborhood. Yeah. So he was wanted for rape. And there was this red, you know, what was it called? A red alert, red list put out for him originally.
Was it? Oh, I can't remember the exact name of that, yeah.
Yeah, I forget the terminology. But essentially Sweden, you know, wanted him. And he pops up and gives himself up to the British authorities, which is, if we look at the news, you know, right as I come to you right now, the latest is that, you know, the bail has been posted, but they're processing it. and he's not actually been set free, but he should probably get out of jail tomorrow, and then he's going to go stay at this, you know, at this safe house, and he's going to have to actually wear a tracking, you know, bracelet.
Really?
Well, yeah, I just saw that from the good old BBC just just a little bit before we connected up. So he was arrested, or you know, he was brought in because of these rape charges. So why is he being, you know, busted for something completely unrelated to the work at WikiLeaks? Kind of reminds me in a way of, well, they got Al Capone for tax evasion. Is it could it be just a case of, well, we want you for this, but we'll ensnare you with any little thing we can so that then we've got you, and then we'll extradite you and be able to do our bidding.
Who knows? I mean, I wouldn't doubt Sweden would turn him over to the United States in a whiff. You know, they would do that right away, because as far as I've read, the charges here in Sweden is he's got a fine of 5,000 crowns or so, which is not a lot. The calculations on that later, it's probably like a $300, maybe something like that, a little bit more.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and this is of course on these so-called rape charges, which is obviously ridiculous in itself, because it's, again, as far as I've understood the situation, this has to do with a condom that broke during a sexual act between two parties that are obviously willingly performing that act. And furthermore, I think that this whole, I guess, if you will, then sex situation is interesting in itself, because that might allude to some kind of MK Ultra type style agent, if you will. I mean, he comes up here to Sweden in August, late August, I think it is. I don't know within how many days, but he managed to have sex with two different girls in a very short time. It feels like some kind of, you know, James Bond type of character.
Exactly.
Secret Service going around manipulating people with some kind of, you know, sexual manipulation and things like that. He ends up in bed with these different women everywhere. What's going on here? Isn't he like just a hacker working for his stuff, you know? And these two girls, of course, are at least one of them at this point. I haven't been able to confirm the other one, but Anna Ordin, one of the girls, who she's been kind of more in the limelight because she's more of a political activist, etc., is involved in something called the Brotherhood Movement. I'm sure you heard about that too, James.
And I was going to say, we know of one person's name, and I don't really know who the other person is, but there have been articles and things that people have been fleshing out that perhaps this was some kind of honeypot operation, honeypot being old, you know, espionage terms for using sex to ensnare a man to get the secrets or whatever you may need.
Yeah.
So this woman, Anna Ordin, she had tweets, you know, her posts on Twitter from August where she was, you know, praising Assange and we're going to hang out and I love hanging out with all these smart people, and she deleted all those. Latin media, Principa Latina and also Grandma, they allege she works with anti-Castro Cubans. And as soon as you hear connections, anti-Castro Cubans, that sure sounds like old early CIA era Bay of Pigs, John F. Kennedy era. And these anti-Castro Cubans are alleged to be connected to Luis Posada Carriles, one of, you know, great kind of international terrorists that, of course, the U.S. has funded. He's the Cuban airliner bomber. He's connected to Iran-Contra. And yes, even connected to the Bay of Pigs, the whole Bay of Pigs thing, as Nixon would say. Mm. But this girl, Anna Ordin, she even wrote, a book or a pamphlet or something called 7 Steps to Legal Revenge, which some have noted, and I had realized this myself, reads like it may have been written by, I don't know if you ever remember a woman named Valerie Solanas. Mm-hmm. She was the woman who shot Andy Warhol. She wrote the Scum Manifesto. So Ordin associated with groups like this, and her, you said some kind of brotherhood connection. I've heard them referred to as the Ladies in White.
That is the Cuban not branch, but this is a Cuban group who apparently are anti-Castro, and she was apparently down there and talking with them when she went to a trip in Cuba, and consequently she was thrown out of that because of that, I think.
Huh. So we ask, you know, was this a sort of intelligence honeypot situation of using sex to basically ensnare him, or is she some kind of handler, some kind of contact? Again, throw in another pop culture reference. This is kind of like the John le Carre, you know, spy novel, The Spy Who Came In from the Cold, which even features, you know, an assassin, an intel agent called Blondie. So that's, I think, what you were referencing earlier, as we see a lot of these, the symbolism and the names and the things that sort of pop up again and again and again, whether this pirate symbolism or this blonde symbolism or this ladies in white or the Great White Brotherhood.
Yeah, yeah. It's something weird here in that sense going on, and it seems like at least one of these girls here, then the other one that has been part in this is called Sofia Villén. And as far as I understood the situation too, apparently they were talking with each other or something like that, and they found out that one had sex with the other, and either they co-jointly agreed to, yeah, okay, let's now contact the police. And let's now, you know, bring him or accuse him of rape, basically, which obviously other people pointed out, it's an insult to the people who actually are, you know, truly being raped in that sense. This has nothing to do with that at all. And how Sweden's political correctness just, you know, these kinds of laws are just messing up the whole situation. But anyway, that's a different topic in that sense. But the Brotherhood movement in that sense, I find is interesting as well, because that seems to be some kind of, It's I don't know if the CIA would work with people like this. That's always a possibility. Of course, they probably work with whoever they can to achieve their goals. But this is it's a lefty Christian a social democratic kind of organization. And she, Anna, at least Anna Ardin in this case, obviously have real, you know, allegiance to the extreme feminist you know, movements that are prevalent up here as well. So I don't know if she was working for the CIA. I personally don't believe she is at this point, because as far as I read the situation, she only happened to write for this particular magazine that was funded by this, you know, the anti-Castro guy that you mentioned earlier. But who knows, James? It could be true, and we could really be looking at a kind of an agent that is just flying all over the world. She's doing different things, and she just seems to lack kind of a center and a personal own opinion about anything. She's just kind of following the wind, if you know what I mean, in that sense, and pops up in whatever situation that she might be needed in.
And some folks have even said that Assange himself seemed, you know, I believe folks like Webster Tarpley have pretty much come straight out and said he's obviously MK Ultra, CIA, LSD, kind of Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
He speaks in monotone. He doesn't seem very emotional about things. Unfortunately, that, like so many of these other things, are kind of left speculative at this point. Again, we can just kind of ask questions and make these connections, hopefully. So what about not looking into 9/11? That was the story that came out this summer that, again, as was sort of the new launch this year of WikiLeaks with the Afghan war logs and the Iraq diaries and now Cablegate. But there was this interview with the Belfast Telegraph in July of this year where he said, let's just quote it, "I'm constantly annoyed that people are distracted by false conspiracies such as 9/11, when all around we provide evidence of real conspiracies for war or mass financial fraud." I would tend to say that 9/11 meets both of those standards.
Absolutely.
That it was a conspiracy for war and mass financial fraud and more. And then they even ask him about the Bilderbergers. And he says, well, that's vaguely conspiratorial in a networking sense. So for, I think, you know, folks like us, Henrik, we tend to maybe not trust folks who say, there's nothing to do with 9/11. Why don't you pay attention to the real conspiracies?
Yeah, that's right. It's a biggie, obviously. Again, the unwillingness to look into that or to, I guess, dig out or try to find information that leads to this. The question obviously then becomes, is WikiLeaks the controlled opposition? Is that where the attention of all the people who potentially had questions about the war or other kind of you know, related areas, Is that where they're meant to turn their focus, energy, and turn their heads towards WikiLeaks now and focus on that instead of many of the other things that are unfolding and happening out there? What do you make of this, James?
I think it really, really does. And I had forgotten that just over a year ago, it was November 2009, WikiLeaks did do this 9/11 pager message intercept data dump. I don't know if you recall that.
No,
I had forgotten about it. I had to dig back in my own archives on the website that in November 2009, there was a massive release of pager messages from the day of 9/11 which did, you know, even on first glance, show tons of messages about, you know, bombs in the building, bombs going off. And I, and like I said, I'd forgotten about that, lost in the haze and the sort of, you know, the disappointment of him saying that he's annoyed by, you know, 9/11 truth. It was like, wait, they did do information on 9/11. Is it possible at that point they were kind of making their bones with the fringier conspiracy stuff that would get, you know, the alternative media kind of on their side, and then gradually moving towards the sort of lowest common denominator stuff that we've now reached with,
right.
You know, revelations like Berlusconi is vain, Sarkozy is thin-skinned, that's the level where we've reached now. Again, this sort of tabloid human interest kind of angle.
Yeah, that's right. It's possible, and the question there then obviously is, what media is focusing on what information here? Because again, I guess the difficulty and the problem in this situation we have to point out, of course, is that we're talking also about, you know, a lot of information here, a lot of information. I mean, in the last data dump or whatever you call it alone, there was, I think, around 200,000 documents, you know, released, maybe containing several pages each. That's a lot of information right there.
It's a ton of information, and we've really only seen, you know, just fractions of it because, for whatever reason, all of this information was given to the New York Times, The Guardian, and Der Spiegel.
That's
again,
right.
Is that something a sort of counterculture rebel would do to say, oh, well, I want to give all my information to these mainstream media outlets who, again, had they been doing the job they were supposed to do, they wouldn't have led the charge for these illegal wars based on lies in the first place.
That's right.
Now they can turn around and sort of sell more newspapers by having exclusive access to this information, but then on the same, you know, or the other side, I guess, be able to sort of demonize and sort of twist it back to say, you know, don't always trust, you know, those crazy internet people. You need to come back to, you know, the mainstream media because we're the ones you can trust.
Yeah, yeah.
They can kind of, they're kind of playing both sides of the fence.
That's right. And they can clean up their own image and said, see, we reported on this. We told you about this. But at the same time, just as you say, James, it's interesting then that they would choose to go to these official sources, because as far as I'm concerned, if I was behind that, I would say, no, screw you, mainstream media. We're going to be able to do this on our own. We don't need you. Your time is over. You could fight, you know, another battle, if you will, on this with that information on the same level with that, you know, with all these documentations as well. But that didn't happen,
because,
obviously.
No, and that's the thing, that, you know, in this era of the web, fortunately, or at least that's the idea, that, you know, every website is equal. Someone could type in nytimes.com as easily as they could type in mediamonarchy.com.
That's right.
So why would they go to these outlets? Were they looking, I don't know, were they looking for the sort of, you know, mainstream credibility? Or, again, these are just kind of a lot of the questions that we've had. So let's now, I guess, maybe even jump to the idea of what kind of what's going on right now, that he's become this sort of, again, Assange has become this sort of cause celeb. And we have all kinds of celebrity, you know, Michael Moore, film director Ken Loach, Bianca Jagger, who has interesting connections on her own, and even journalist and activist John Pilger, who I feel like should kind of know better. But we have all of these folks now kind of coming out in his defense, which ultimately I think is probably right, because regardless of how any of this shakes out, or in the backgrounds and the cults and the CIA and all of these questions that we've asked, is that ultimately when it comes down to it, this is going to be about freedom on the web.
Sure.
And I think that's ultimately where this kind of conversation is leading for us, and where it probably should lead.
Yes.
So regardless of whether you think Assange is an agent, or maybe that he's being used as a cutout, again, to use the espionage parlance of using someone to distribute information that they don't really know why it's being used or where it's, you know, coming from. So regardless of any of those kind of questions, ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, an attack on the web. And like I said, with having so many folks, you know, ask me specifically about WikiLeaks, I kind of lay out some of my quick questions about it, but then say ultimately none of that really matters. It's really going to come down to, you know, control and freedom of the web. And we've seen, you know, so many things here in the States. You know, we now have cybercom that is operational, this sort of, you know, military computer arm. Hell, is it possible? We know they went operational just a few months ago. Is it possible them going operational is loading WikiLeaks up with a bunch of bad information? Hmm. Perhaps they're being, you know, filled with kind of garbage. I don't know.
That's interesting. And there is one other little connection here. Don't know if you've heard about that. Allegedly, when Julian did an interview with Forbes magazine, they bothered to ask him about his connection with a hacker named Mudge, or Peter Zatko, I think his name is. And he currently is working with the Pentagon, DARPA specifically, with a program or a project called Cyber Inside Threat, or CINDER, which apparently is about, you know, leaks, preventing leaks in the future. And apparently Assange and this guy is coming from the same background. Basically, that's what Julian Assange confirms in the interview, that they come from the same milieu, as the word he's using there. So that's interesting. Doesn't definitively point something out, but it's interesting.
Uh-huh. And we see a lot of times, you know, that former burglars, you know, get a job with a security company because they know how to do it.
That's
and,
right.
You know, that just kind of makes sense. But it's, again, to kind of go back to this, you know, celebrity, you know, call celeb as it's become, is it also possible, you know, that Assange is now being kind of made out to be a sort of new hero for the left?
That's right.
Who don't have a whole lot of luck with heroes. And we've seen, you know, Obama has done, you know, nothing but disappoint folks who, again, should have probably known better. But just, you know,
media is playing ping pong with people, obviously, as well. And we're being bounced between these stories back and forth. And, oh, what's the latest? What's going on now? And why should I be concerned about this now? And in that sense, but obviously there is a real story at the core of this as well, whatever angle you choose to look from it. There's still a part of me that feels, wow, one should be careful, you know, take a step back, go easy before we jump to conclusions about what this is or obviously how this information is going to be used. At the same time, I feel it's pretty interesting. We're living in a time where a lot of these things are actually now coming to the surface, and a subject like this is actually brought to the mainstream in one way or another. And I can't help to think that the quality of the times and the advantage of the web in that sense has made this possible, which is incredible on its own. But then again, obviously, we know that right away the other side is going to try to use this to their advantage at the end of the day in one way or another as well, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the big questions that has been coming out in the wake of Cablegate is a lot of folks saying, huh, there sure was nothing about Israel.
That's right.
And of course, here we got to go there. We have to mention the I word,
of course,
which is difficult to do because, you know, you can't criticize, you know, the actions of the state of Israel without being labeled as some racist anti-Semite, which,
sure,
of course,
yeah,
unfortunately, there are a lot of those out there. But there's a website called Syria Truth that is alleging that WikiLeaks struck a deal with Israel over these, you know, cable gates. And then Haaretz even reports that Netanyahu thinks, you know, the WikiLeaks revelations were good for Israel because it's shown, for whatever reason, everybody's scared of Iran and Pakistan is helping Al-Qaeda. And that's the question about all these things is, you know, the ultimate question, who benefits?
That's right. And obviously as well, needs to be pointed out that we're still talking about official documents here, as far as I'm concerned. It's just that they've chosen to withhold them from the public, of course, but it's still official reporting on certain things, meaning that it's a level one intelligence report on this, not level 4, 5, 6 or you know, above, or whatever you want to say, top secret or what have you. So it's on a need-to-know basis by the people who have performed the tasks that they were, you know, ordered to do. And there might be a much more interesting and truthful communication going on at other levels, if I put it that way. What do you make of that, James?
I think also, you know, it almost kind of makes my head swim as you start to kind of try and plow through all of these questions, that I would love to be as excited about this, I think, as a lot of folks are, as it's become, you know, this kind of rallying cry and cause. But just as these more and more kind of questions and connections come up, it just makes me go, oh, man, I don't know. And you know, and maybe that's sometimes the smartest thing we can actually say is, I don't know.
That's right.
I don't have all the answers.
Exactly. And that's what I think everybody should keep in mind when we read about this, when we hear about it, and when the media and other, you know, people as well are trying to play ping pong with our opinion about this stuff. And we need to just say, okay, well, we can't be sure. We have to see where this leads us in terms of sources and so forth as well. But it's so much to say about the situation. I think that we, although despite that, managed to summarize, I guess, many of the questions, many of the loose ends to this whole story as well. But is there anything else you feel like, James, that we should touch upon or so before we begin to wrap things up here for the first hour, and specifically on this whole WikiLeaks and Julian Assange story?
I would just kind of say, and just to kind of try and reiterate that, you know, regardless of maybe what's going on behind the curtain, this seems to be playing out just like the Hegelian dialectic, that problem, reaction, solution. That, you know, the insiders cause a problem to generate a reaction out of us so that they can offer the solution that they wanted all along but didn't have the political capital to do it. So just as, you know, violent anarchists, you know, smashing windows and all those things justify, you know, the brutal police state crackdown, unfortunately, yes. Maybe these kind of offensive hacks for, you know, Operation Payback and the rest of it, unfortunately, is that just going to justify, you know, more policing of the net? I think it's a simple way I try to explain things to folks. And again, I feel like I do better to do one-on-one with folks in you know, in the work on the website and the work on the radio show. Those go out to people who I, you know, maybe don't know. But in talking, you know, to friends and family and those kind of associates, you can discover maybe what their interests are, and you can start to kind of tailor that message of go, oh, well, this guy likes, you know, economics, so I'll talk, you know, money situations, yeah. Or this person likes food. But I would just have to say, and I kind of break it down on these different subjects this way, that, you know, even if you believe the official story of 9/11, it's like, well, they say they hate us and fight us because we invade their lands. So even if you believe the official story of man-made global warming, what are paying carbon taxes to the Rothschilds and J.P. Morgan going to do?
Yeah.
So even if you believe the official story of WikiLeaks, you know, the real action is in the reaction, as the old saying goes. And there's a new McClatchy News Service poll that has 70% of Americans saying that Assange should be prosecuted.
Hmm.
So ultimately, you know, like I said, the real actions and the reaction.
Yeah.
They seem to be setting the table for some kind of what we've called an I-9-11 event. So that, well, what will we beg to be protected? Imagine the web going down for a week.
Yeah.
Imagine if these, you know, Operation Payback hacks that have hit, you know, Amazon and MasterCard and Visa, imagine if those ratchet up and we've seen and heard warnings about they may go for government websites. Imagine it escalating to that. Imagine it escalating to affecting, you know, ATMs, or I can't check my Facebook or Twitter. People will lose it. And after, you know, a week of that, you would have people begging to get back on the web.
Do something. Do it now. I don't care whatever you do. Just fix it.
Exactly. So, you know, you wonder if that maybe is the scenario being set up. And again, just like all of these kind of questions, I don't really kind of personally subscribe to the sort of unified, you know, conspiracy theory that there's, you know, an all-powerful one group at the very top and they make every little single thing happen.
Sure.
I tend to see them a lot as, like I said, you know, multi-generational serial killers and gangsters that, yeah, they kind of battle for territory and sometimes they have to bump each other off. But they're ultimately not going to do anything to affect, you know, their overall game.
That's right. I mean, you have different factions of the mafia families at times killing each other, at times working with each other to achieve a certain goal. And when that goal is achieved or they fall through on that, then new battle next day. And I see it much in the same way. The people have to look at the mafia, what they're doing, and then just supplant that over, you know, on a bigger scale, on a global scale. Uh-huh. And then I think we can get an idea of what is going on there.
And maybe, you know, maybe this is all the, you know, the revelation of the method, as it's called. You know,
maybe all
of these things are coming out on purpose because, again, maybe the powers that be ultimately want to manifest everything to, you know, to make another James Bond reference, is, you know, is the bad guy telling us every, you know, the all their plans towards the end?
That's
and
right.
This
that's
is, right. And is this our chance to figure out how to escape? And
that's right. I mean, and it's also what we might be looking at here, just as you say, James, it's, this might not be as a on a about a revolution on the streets, although in certain countries that seems to be happening right now. But we might be talking about an internet revolution in that sense that you're talking about as well. We have the pirates, if you will, then of the web, that in the ancient times, this their actions also, you know, justify the control of the sea in many ways. These pirates are now going to do to attack and going to create a first cyber war, as it already has been called and referred to as, and it's a kind of a world war, if you will, but on the web, the first real war being fought on the web. And again, this will justify more control at the end of the day, and more regulation and a structured web where everybody cannot, you know, put out what they want or write what they want in terms of code or what have you. We'll just have to see how that pans out. But it seems in any regard that what we're faced with right now is a kind of a cyber war, I guess, in that sense, James.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess, you know, in the alternative media, we can be really pessimistic and just see WikiLeaks as, oh, this is just some other conspiracy and it's all the Zionists or whatever name you want to attach to it, or we can see it and use it as an opportunity. That's right. I think, the angle and the way that we should go.
Absolutely. Okay, James, let's begin here to wrap things up for the first hour. Obviously, for you guys out there who are not yet familiar with James' work, do take a look at it, mediamonarchy.blogspot.com. You can follow James on his radio show and, of course, his co-joint videos that he's doing together with James Corbett as well. Is there anything else you want to mention about the website or about any other things that you have on the horizon, James?
Well, I was even just about to say, as you said, you know, it's essentially all out, you know, cyber war. In the last year or so, I started a couple of other websites that, you know, I can't give as much attention to as I do the main site. But again, it's all about kind of trying to grow this sort of independent, you know, alternative media outlets. Almost 2 years ago, I started a site called foodworldorder.com to just sort of go over food issues. And about a year ago, I started cyberspacewar.com.
There you go.
To go over all of these issues. So whether, as I kind of say, it's like whether it's, you know, inner space or outer space, you know, whether it's about microchipping or NASA missions or, you know, covering all of those kind of things. I guess I try and, like I said, kind of be a jack of all trades and cover a lot of different areas. And I would say the website and the radio show kind of go hand in hand, because I kind of feel like if you're only looking at or listening to one of them, that you're kind of missing the other part.
Sure, sure.
I use the website to lay out all the articles and to put the information there, but then it's on the radio show that we kind of go over it and go through it and can kind of make these connections. And like I said, I come from a, you know, college radio background, so I like to think that I kind of took my, you know, indie rock radio programming and kind of transferred it over to alternative media that I think makes a really interesting listen. And I use a lot of clips and a lot of other media, and, you know, always start out with a song. Some, you know, like I said, I come from a music background, so I still love, you know, music and pop culture, and it's been a way to kind of put all those things together for me.
All right, excellent, James. Again, then look for the links. We'll have them up on redascreations.com to James' many different websites and projects there as well. Excellent. Stay with us, James, and we'll be back here with more after a short break.
His men stole the queen from her bed and bound her in her bones. The seas be ours and bite the powers where
In our second hour, we are going to discuss the Portland Patsy, false flag terrorism, TSA gropings, naked body scanners, the new media, and more on the cyber war and internet censorship. Stay with us as we continue with more together with James Evan Pilato. Log into our members area and download or stream. If you're not yet a member, why not treat yourself or a friend to a thoughtful Christmas present, a Red Ice membership. Head on over to redicecreations.com where you can read more. We have hours and hours of interviews with some of the interesting minds of our times. We also have TV episodes, audio commentary, music, films, and video interviews. This is independent, commercial-free radio, and it gets better with your support.